UVSC in Utah Valley. And one day in my class is the day that the student is trying to figure out whether they're going to take your course or not. You know, they don't sign up before they get there because they want to see the syllabus and how hard it is. And as an instructor, I look at these students, and there's always that feeling I have that I kind of throw out there, which is, oh, I hope that person stays in my class. Well, when I saw Sage, that was exactly what I felt. I thought, oh, I hope she doesn't quit. I hope she doesn't read the syllabus and go, I can't do this. I don't want to do this, you know, or whatever the case might be. Well, she stayed, and it was the most memorable and awesome experience for both me, my family, too, as we got to know, and Sage has spent time with in our home and with my grandchildren, and has spoken to many of my classes since then and changed hearts. You know how you read those self-help books and you wish that you could just apply it all and you'd change forever and be that awesome person that they describe in the book? Well, that's what happens when you hear a near-death experience that touches your heart. Something inside you changes. Some fear, maybe, no longer is a fear, but instead is replaced with hope and an awesome resolution that life has value. Sage, unbeknownst to Sage, has done this miracle in the hearts of many people. And I know I shouldn't say this because I'm putting pressure on her. But just by being who she is and her willingness to share her goodness, her love, her light, she makes a difference. Sage is, what, 22 now? 23. She has really grown up and old. I can't take this. It has been awesome for me to have witnessed her maturity, and she has just graduated from BYU in Idaho and in psychology. Don't tell anyone, but she has done some awesome things and is presently working, and I think I'll let her tell you about that. But she is back here in Utah. Her home is New Mexico, and I'm so thrilled that she's back here and that we're able to share her, and she's willing to share herself with us. And I will, from now on, just turn the time over to her so that she can tell you her story. Sage.
Okay, like Sandy said, I'm Sage, and there's a lot of people here tonight, but that's okay. I just won't look. No, I'm fine. Before I tell you my experience, I think it's great, like all great stories begin to start at the beginning. I come from an awesome family, but my parents were, I don't know how to say, wayward in their ways. And my parents were hippies when I was born, and so they were crazy and fun and probably did every drug under the sun. They're insane, but it's great. My parents never really had a firm belief in any religion. I mean, they're brought up whatever they were. But when I was about 3 years old, I started asking, you know, I was a curious little kid, and I always needed to know the answers about everything. And I guess one of the kids at my school started talking about, you know, catechism and God and stuff like that. And so I started asking my parents, you know, who's God and who's Jesus? And they really didn't have an answer. And so they asked, you know, do you want to go to church? And so we, you know, went to church, and my family found the church that was right for them, and they're baptized. And I remember that I was so excited because I had a sense and a feeling of a beginning starting to happen in my family's life. And I could tell that my family was changing. And again, I want to preface right here. I'm not here to promote my religion, nor any religion. I'm simply here to tell you that there's a supreme being, a person that looks out for every one of us and has an endless love for us all. So continuing my story, about a week after my family was baptized in the church that they decided. My dad loves taking me and my brother camping. And so I was so excited because I'm such a tomboy and I like to pretend I'm tough and rough, and I'm really not. So it was good to go away with my dad and my brother and have a boys' weekend. And so we went fishing, and my dad took along a camper trailer, and they know to catch the best fish in the morning, you have to get up really early. And my family knows never to get me up early. I'm not a morning person, and I'm just angry. So my brother and my dad went out fishing really early, and my dad would come and check on me in the camper. And, you know, he'd come in and out and check on me, and I'm still sleeping. And then our dog was with us, and it started barking. And my brother looked around and saw that the camper that I was in was billowing with smoke and fire. My dad ran up and went in and tried to find me. But amongst all the smoke and fire, he could not find me. And he went outside to gather another breath of air. And he was panicked and didn't know what to do, but realized that if he couldn't find me this next time, he'd have to watch me die. So he gathered all his air, all his inner strength, and went and found me. By then, I was lifeless, not breathing, and the sleeping bag I was sleeping in had melted to my skin. He rushed me out and tried to give me CPR. He was able to resuscitate me, and I let out a gasp of breath. We moved, and about a few seconds later, the whole camper that I was in exploded. I was alive, but unconscious. And so I was rushed to the local hospital. My dad was scarred, his hands and eyes, only second-degree burns, but still they rushed him to an OR room, and they rushed me to an OR room, and they told my family that to say their goodbyes, because this was probably the last time that they would ever see me alive. Well, miraculously, I made it through that first surgery, and I was not fully stabilized, but they thought if they did some more surgeries that I'd be able to be okay. But they knew that the technology in New Mexico is nowhere where it needs to be, so they rushed me to Texas, and I flew in a flight for life. My family picked up their whole belongings. I went to the Nurse Burns Institute. There, I was in a coma for 6 weeks. And also there, they basically told my mom and dad and my brother every night to say their goodbyes. Because I was able to survive. Or I had an ulcer, and the medication they were getting through my IV was counteracting the antibiotics, and I probably wouldn't make it through the night. My family endured this for 6 weeks. And in the 6 weeks, I was in a coma. And what I want to share with you is what happened in that coma. I was dreaming, and I had this dream. And it was complete darkness, and it was really, really scary. And all these eyes were looking at me, and I was terrified. I was only 5 years old, and so any little nightmare like that would terrify a five-year-old. And so I remembered I could pray to the Heavenly Father. And that's what I did. I said, Heavenly Father, please help me. Well, the darkness became gray, and the gray became an even lighter gray. And then it became white. And then I was encompassed in a bright white light. And there I was standing, and upon this vast openness, which seemed to be endless scenery of just what should have been blinding white light. But where I was, it wasn't blinding, it was comforting. And I was standing there observing my surroundings. And before me, a couple of angels appeared on a platform. And there were stairs leading up to that platform. And past those angels were another platform with stairs. And on that was my Savior, Jesus Christ. I went up and looked at those angels. And I looked, they were on either side of me. And I looked on both sides. And they didn't have wings or anything like that. But it was just, they were dressed in normal white robes. And I went and sat, and I crawled up on Jesus Christ's lap. And I sat there. And the feeling up there was such happiness. There was love. There was compassion. There was endless joy. There was no fear. There was no hatred. There was nothing of evil. It was completely pure. And as I sat on Jesus' lap, I was talking to him. But up there, it's not proper syntax and fragments. It's not sentences ended in periods. It's not even talking like this. Up there, it's just talking through your thoughts, and your thoughts become feelings, and those feelings become known. And so I was discussing with this entity who I know is Jesus Christ. I said, you know, I really like it up here. And he said, he addressed me by my name. He said, Sage, I know you love it up here. And I said, you know, I'm going to stay here. And he said, Sage, I know you want to, but you really need to go back. And I said, you know, no. I told him no. And I was a stubborn little child. And I looked into his eyes, and his eyes were blue. And he said, Sage, I love you. I said, I love you too. I said, you know, I just want to stay here. I know I'm safe here. I know there's no pain here. And I know when I go back, I'm going to be in so much pain. And he said, Sage, I'm not going to lie to you. I know that's true. They said, I will always be there with you. And so I thought about it. I said, you know what? All right, I'll go. And I just remember sitting there, and then I woke up. And as I woke up, it was very fresh and vivid in my memory. And my family was all around my bed, and they were sitting there, and they're surprised that I woken up. You know, they never thought that it would happen. You know, they said, Sage, you know, how are you feeling? And I was like, you know, I hurt, you know. And they're like, I know, I know. So they're like, what were you thinking? What were you dreaming? And I told them my story. And they said, all right. They didn't say, Sage, don't be making up stories. My family firmly believed who I saw, what I saw, and what I experienced. I have undergone 78 surgeries since then. Throughout this whole time, throughout my whole struggles, I have had to be rehabilitated. I have gone through endless pain. The doctors told me I would never walk again. I told them that was unacceptable. They told me I would never lead a normal life. And again, I said, no, you go back to your drawing board and figure out something else, because that's not going to work for me. I never once was bitter at what happened to me. I never once realized I could be angry for what had happened to me. The reason I am not, and the reason I believe I am not, is because of my experience. Through my experience, I have learned what I like to call sageism. You know, wise, you know, beyond my years, whatever, it's okay. And so I decided that I would try and figure out why this experience has happened to me and what I gained from it. Number one is love. Love is endless up there. And I believe I was in heaven, and I know I was in heaven. And up there, it is endless. Can you imagine that? It's so awesome to think that you are filled with love and no hatred behind that. No jealousy. You're not worried if someone else loves you. It's just bounteous. I realize I can love everybody, and that's what I've tried to take with me. Even Alexis Ratopoulos in sixth grade, who annoyed me, I even carried love for her. And that is what I believe Jesus Christ has. He has an endless love for us all, and that is what he wants us to know. The second sageism I've learned is happiness. I am so happy sometimes, it's probably sickening, huh? I am always smiling. I am just so high in life, and it, like, I have never really been down in my entire life. I've never really, I can only count, you know, on one hand, on one of my hands, the times I've really been depressed. And I know it's through my experience that I've gained this happiness. Because I realize happiness is a choice we make. And sometimes it's a choice I need to make moment to moment. And I want to share a story about this happiness. When I was, after I was burned and I was still in the wheelchair, my mom was sitting with me and I was looking at my hands and I was like, Mom, I was like, when are my fingers going to grow back? And she's just looking at me like, I have no idea what she's talking about, but okay. I said, Mom, I said, you know when a tree branch breaks off and it grows back? I said, isn't that what's going to happen to my hands? You should have seen my mom's face. How is she going to tell her six-year-old child that she's never going to have fingers again? She's never going to be able to paint her nails pink. My mom said, Sage, your fingers are what they are right now, and they're never going to grow back. And I cried that whole day. I was just wallowing in my own self-pity. I was like, oh, poor me. But you know what? The next day I was over it and on to something else because I realized I'm not going to get anywhere feeling sorry for myself. I'm not going to get anywhere if I just don't choose to be happy. I think that everyone sometimes has a hard time thinking it's easier said than done, but it's really not. Happiness is so easy sometimes that people don't even realize it. I am happy no matter what happened, and I'm happy because of what happened. I've learned so many things, which brings me to my third sageism, which is beauty. Beauty is found in everything. I never try to take each day for granted. There is so much around us that right now people are like, oh, there's so many horrible things happening. Don't focus on those. I'm not saying be ignorant, but there are so many beautiful things happening at the same time. I really had to find beauty. Because of my outward appearance, I know I don't look like everyone else. But at the same time, I know that I'm beautiful. I know everyone is. And everyone has this potential for their ultimate beauty to let shine. And that is another thing I learned through my experience. Is that if you took everything at face value, you would be so shortened. It's so awesome to look at things and to have each day filled with the knowledge that you can see so many wonderful things and look inside somebody and see their beauty and not find their flaws. I am just, it's so hard to get across the point of where I was and what had happened. I want to share that it is up there, it was happiness. It was beauty. It was love. I share this every day with the people around me. I try to encourage people to be happy, to share their love, to be loved, not to be scared. Continuing on in my life, like I said, I've endured 78 surgeries. So far, I don't have any more planned, but who knows? I'm pretty much done. I have gotten my education in psychology. It is my goal to get my PhD so I can counsel other burn survivors and their families on how to be happy, on how to overcome trials and obstacles, to know that life is more how you make it than what you want to make of it. So I have gotten my degree in psychology, and right now I want to share where I'm working at because I think it pertains to what I'm talking about. I work at a psychiatric facility. I work with specifically juvenile sex offenders. These boys are the bottom of the barrel. They are bad boys. But I was really surprised I got hired there because you have to have the physical strength, which I am. I'm pretty strong despite what you think. And I was surprised because these kids have been institutionalized their whole lives. And so they probably have never seen anyone that looks like me. So when I first got there, there was a lot of chatter amongst these little boys. And they asked, one came up to me and he said, "Sage, you're always so happy." And I was like, "I know, isn't that great?" And he's like, he just looked at me like I was the crazy one, you know. And he said, "Sage, how are you so happy?" I was like, "You know what? It's a choice I make every day." And he never thought that that could be a choice. So working there, these kids get to see someone that has endured and went through a lot and still has ended up happy and positive. I think it's so good for these kids to see that and to know. And I wish I could, tell them my full story and be like, there's a supreme being and he loves you, but, they fire me so fast it would be funny. But, one of these days, hopefully, maybe when I give them my 2 weeks notice, I'll just let these kids know. But until then, I try and show through my example. But through my experience and through all this, through my whole life, this experience has been my aha moment, my defining moment when I was 5 years old, which is a lot to put on a little 5-year-old, but, I take it where I can. But this experience that has happened to me, I can always think back on it. And as the years go by, it gets a little hazier, and it gets a little less vivid in my imagination, like not in my imagination, but in my head, what it was like. And I wish I could have a video of what I saw so you guys can know. Because my words don't do justice for what I felt and what I saw. But through all this, it has shaped my life to what it is now. And I'm grateful for what I've gained. So many people go through life, don't know what they're going to do one day to the next, don't know, have any direction. I'm one of those people sometimes. I'm everywhere. I sometimes don't know what I'm doing tomorrow. But I do know that there's a supreme being that loves me and has an infinite love, not only for me, but for everybody. No matter if you believe in him or not, he believes in you. And I think the reason he wanted me to come back is to share the message of his infinite love and what what the end goal is, what you really want to achieve, is not here in this life. It's in the next one to come. And, you know, I think I'm not scared to die, and I can't wait to die. It's not like I have a death wish or anything like that, but I know that there's a wonderful place after this place, even better than this place. And it's such a security blanket for me, and I just want to share that with you, that there's a wonderful place to be seen and had. And it's not what, not how much money you make. It's not how beautiful you think you are, or you think someone else is. This life is just about loving others and having happiness, because he wants you to be happy. Because up there, it is eternal happiness. And she wanted to tell me about bowling. I am an avid bowler. I know you're thinking, what? But every Wednesday in college, I went bowling with my friends, and it was so fun and awesome. And I think you're like, another sageism is humor. You have got to have humor about yourself, about life. It's too hard taking things seriously for me. I got a joke, and so everyone in my bowling league got to come up with their own little fun bowling name. And mine was Crispy Critter, because I am a little Crispy Critter. And I'm proud of it. And I always tell people, I'm like, I'm not burned, I'm just slightly well done. I love just laughing and being, it's fun and humorous. And I think one of the things that defined me when I was younger is someone was saying, oh, well, Sage is the burn victim. And I said, no, I'm not a burn victim. I'm a burn survivor. You have to keep a mentality that you're not a victim. You're not a helpless person. You can help yourself and survive anything that is put in your path. And I think that's all I have to say. But what? Oh. Okay. She wants me to tell you about when I went to school. She's so good, because, you know, I always forget things to say, and I always think everyone knows me, because I feel like I know everybody, but it's all good. When I first started going to school, my family just kind of had this, like, open question-answer and brought pictures of what I looked like before, what had happened, and what after. And, you know, the kids had an opportunity to ask questions to my family. You know, is she still in pain? You know, can I play with her? And, you know, just stuff that, you know, normal kids ask, you know, like, can she eat? How does she eat? Because I didn't have my little nubbies at the time. And so my family was an awesome support system through all this. And they answered these kids' questions. And so when I came back to school, you know, kids treated me like, you know, I was their friend that I always have been. And so it was really awesome for these kids to see that, you know, I'm not really normal, but as normal as I could be, you know. And so they're able to treat me just like a normal kid, and I played tag and everything, so it was good. And I just want you to know, I'm still happy, and I still carry this happiness with me. And I think people sometimes are taken back about, how can you be so happy? Is it fake? It's not fake. It's seriously, I'm just happy to be alive and to be here and to walk. And I don't take for granted every day. I think one thing I do live by is that I try and do one thing every day that scares me. And it's not like picking a fight with some 400-pound guy, because that's not what I mean. I mean just going outside your comfort zone, outside your bubble, and doing something that scares you internally. for example. I am terrified of eating alone in a restaurant. I don't know what it is, but I just vowed I'd never do that. And so one day I decided that was going to be my thing. And I went and ate alone in a restaurant. I had my phone on, like my friend on the cell phone the whole time, but still. I did it, folks. I did it. And I think that's just one thing also is like, you got to do something that scares you. You got to do something that just is exhilarating to know that you're not a prisoner of your own fear, that you can do it. And I think that's, you know, what I try to show people. Sometimes I'm a little scared, but it's all good. When? Okay, my dad would have to bribe me to go to physical therapy sometimes. And so my favorite place was Chuck E. Cheese's. I know, it's great. But there's this little boy that was having a birthday party, and it's just me and my dad at a couple tables away. And this little boy was, like, looking at me and kind of snickering, and I was like, oh. And he's like, look at that ugly boy. And I was just so mad. I went up to him, and I was like, excuse me, I am not a boy. I didn't care he said I was ugly. I was just so mad he called me a boy. Because I had short hair and one of those awkward haircuts. I don't like talking about it, you know, but I was just so mad he called me a boy. I wasn't even fazed by the ugly part. I was like, oh, whatever. So that's just how I am. But I want to thank you guys for having me here. And I don't know how long I talked or rambled on.
You're fine.
Okay, perfection. But if you guys have any questions, I would love it because I forget to leave out things, and I just love to ask. Yeah. Yeah. I did not talk to those angels. I just knew that they couldn't go past where I had gone past. But I couldn't even tell you if they're male or female. And the second one was, yeah, I was 5 years old. I was just a cute little child. That's all I was. Oh, I knew someone was going to ask this. I have tried starting a book so many times, and I am like the definition of procrastinator. I just can't sit down and write a book, but you know, one of these things before I die, one of those lists, I'm going to write a book, and I will write my sagism for you guys all to enjoy. Yeah. I don't think you can ever get that close, but I think I've tried to do steps to maintain a communication with him and to have him a part of my life. And yeah, I can feel his presence. Yeah. Good. And me, and that's it. Uh-huh. Yeah, he only had second-degree burns, and I had third- and fourth-degree burns, and fourth-degree is to the bone, over 70% of my body, and he only had second-degree on his hands and eyes, and you can't even tell if he was in a fire or anything like that. There's no scarring. He just has to wear glasses, but what old guy doesn't, you know?
Her father is really cute. Because I like old guys.
Okay. So does my mom.
Yeah. He is really a very, very handsome man, and there are no scars.
Yeah. Oh. Thank you. awesome. Thanks. Yeah. Yeah, it's healing, for sure. Oh, gosh, thank you. Oh, yes. Yes. No, some of them have been in New York at NYU Medical Center later on after Shriners. Mm-hmm. Survivors. It's okay. It's okay. Don't worry. No, that's exactly why I want to be in this field, because there are so many bitter, angry children that have been affected by being burned, and their family as well, that have never gotten over what happened to their child, and their family is completely torn apart. Their life is unstable. They're completely angry at the world and think that the world owes them something because of what has happened. And that's exactly why I get, because of these kids I met. Because, we're supposed to have, like, a psychologist that comes in and makes sure you're okay, you know? And so the psychologist that came to look at me was this tall, 5'10", skinny blonde. And I was like, I'm sure you know exactly what I'm going through right now. So I just want to be like letting them know, you know, I've been there, done that, and things can be good, you know. So thanks for that question. That's good. That's good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This one kid, Julian, I can tell you right now, at where I work, he, like, I wouldn't say he hates me, but he's skeptical of me. How about that? And he's, you know, talked to other people about me and how he commends me for what I do, but he also gives me a really hard time. Like, he's testing how far my happiness will go, you know, and so I still have hope. I have endless hope for everybody, that I believe anyone can change at any point in their lives for the better. And so I always will carry that hope, no matter if I don't see it in my lifetime, maybe in the next one to come. I think for sure, they're the epitome of openness. They, like, never cast any judgment on anyone. They're just like, oh, well, he's just probably having a bad day. You know, they're just that kind of people, you know. So I for sure think it's their love, their support, their just willingness to trust what I say. And, yeah, I think that you're totally right.
Can I interrupt and say, are you trying to say what do you focus on when you feel down or depressed? or when you have a really rotten roommate that you cannot. Okay. I just thought I'd bring that up because that would take her back to maybe
an angry feeling. Don't get me wrong. It's not like I don't get road rage because I do. But I think what happens in the car stays in the car. But, you know, people ask me this, and, you know, I feel like every time my answer changes, but it's just that choice you make to be happy. And I know, like, it's not like I haven't been heartbroken by a boy. It's not like I haven't, you know, gotten bad grades and felt rotten about it. It's not like I haven't had a bad day. But I realize that there are things in my life that are out of my control. I can't control. But how I respond to them is my control. And I choose that path of happiness, that, you know, it's but a small moment, and I can continue on. And I try not to let it get me down, and I try to stay positive, because it seems when I get down, it's so hard to get back up again, and I'd rather just bypass that and just, you know. So, yeah, I'm not having a good moment right now, but it doesn't mean it's going to affect the rest of my life or tomorrow. Yeah. Sometimes, yeah, that experience is where I go, and I'm like, okay, happiness, love, yeah, I just gotta chant it sometimes, but, yeah, I know I sound like a crazy person sometimes, but.
One of the things that you told me, Sage, was that prayer.
Yeah.
Yeah, is where she goes.
Yeah, prayer, and I don't know if it was okay to bring it up here, but, you know.
It's okay. Meditation's okay to say on television, so you can say prayer.
Yeah, I pray. I pray often, you know. Sometimes, at the end of the day, all I can do is just hit my knees and pray and have that connection with Jesus again, and to have him help me again, because he said he'd always be there, so I'm taking him up on that offer, you know?
Here to your right.
Yes. Oh, I was 7 and so happy. I remember taking my first steps all over again. And I remember that night, and I was walking all around and toddling like a little toddler. And then I couldn't walk for like 2 weeks after that because my muscles are so tired. But I learned to pace myself after that. So, yeah. Yes. You know, I think for sure. I think my family has supported me, and I've been very strong-willed since I was born, but I think I would have been a little empty and hollow and uncertain of my life, unless I found a place like this, you know, and could hear others, but even my own personal what had happened to me personally, it for sure has filled my life better here. That's an awesome question. Right here. I cried every time. It's a work. And Ben and Jerry's, they're magic. It's magic. I seriously, every surgery I've gone through, I've cried every time. So there's no harm in crying. But you know, my family, my dad is awesome. He was there for every single one of my surgeries. So just knowing that someone's there loving you and supporting you also really helped me. And you know, drugs, they're great, you know. Yeah. Oh, you know what? I always get this question once, and my answer always is, it looks like him, but it doesn't capture. Like, his face always looks so stern, you know? He's not, like, smiling, and when I saw him, he was smiling and happy, and it never captures his true, like, happiness. And since I was a little kid, you know, he kind of took on more of that little kid kind of what a little kid would see him as, and, you know, kind of spunky, and, you know, I don't know if I can describe Jesus like that, but I'm going to. And he was just in his eyes. You can sometimes see it in portraits of his eyes, his love, but it never captures his full ambiance. I'll be honest with you. No way. There's no way I can. I'm still human down here, and there's no way I can let go completely. I try and have that love, but, you know, like that Alexis Raptopoulos, I still didn't like her, but I still try to love her, you know? I couldn't let go of all of it. And that. Holding on to grudges or anything, and so I'm never going to capture that down here. I know right now, but
has anyone ever loved you? Have you felt that love from anyone earthly?
No. I mean, the only thing that can come close is my family, but, you know, they still know how to hold grudges too. Yes. For sure. And just finding happiness in little things. I seriously could entertain myself for hours. Like, I'm so easily entertained, and you just got to find happiness in the small things. Like, I don't know, like sleeping in. That's what I find happiness in. But it's just, yeah, find it, like loving. Yeah, I think that's an awesome way to put it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, he forgot to leave that out. Can you believe that? Gosh, no, he didn't. I mean, I'm only 5, so if he's like, Sage, when you're 15, you're going to need to go and do this. And, you know, it would have been way too much of an overload for a 5-year-old, so... You just kind of left it simplistic that you just need to go back. And, you know, through my life, I've kind of figured out step by step what I've needed to do. And he's been there to be like, yeah, that's what you need to do. And no, don't do that. So yeah, I hope I answered your question. No, I wish he'd give me a little more insight, but no, I really don't get any revelations. Sometimes I know, like, feelings of others and my feelings, and I can kind of interpret a situation where I know what to say, and maybe that's some kind of answer to your question, but no, nothing great like that. I wish. Yes. Oh, you're so wonderful. Thank you. Yes. I'd have to say it's a combination of both. I definitely attribute most of it to my experience because of my resiliency, but also my family, again, they're awesome supporters of me. And, you know, they instilled many awesome truths right when I was young. So it's just a combination of that and I think what has happened to me, because I know there's a bigger picture than just my fingers. So I kind of have to take a step back sometimes. Yeah. Oh, well, thank you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's complete white light. And except for that, and it was all white except for his blue eyes as well. Like his, I guess his hair would have been different, but like I said, over the years it's become, you know, less. It's been more vague, but I still remember his eyes, and that is the only color I saw. Not the only. I don't know. I honestly don't know. That's just probably what a 5-year-old could comprehend at the time.
Sage shared while she was talking about the platform one time, and if you heard her, just to further explain that you can tell them if I'm off course, that if you heard her, she said that she knew the angels couldn't go up there, okay? And I asked Sage once, I said, well, how did you know you could go up, you know? And she said she knew he was beckoning her. He didn't say any, like she said, telepathically. She knew beyond a doubt he wanted her, and so she climbed those stairs. And I mean, that's, does he not want all of us? You know, so, just beautiful.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah, I would say I have, but it's not to anywhere near what I experienced. But I know. I know I feel them, you know, sometimes, and but nowhere near what I felt before. It's just a vague inkling. Dave, right there. Dave. Her question was, have I seen or felt his presence before? So, yeah. Okay. How do I distinguish, are you saying, like, how do I distinguish my answers? Like, how I know their answers? Not only my own. I just basically break it down to simplicity. It's the feeling I get, the feeling of what I felt up there and the peace that comes over me, rather than, yeah, it sounds good, I'll do that, you know, I'm nothing. It's more a divine, and things seem to fall into place a little bit better when I do what I get. Very top lady. Yeah. You.
You're not just normally this way.
Try that.
Yeah, I know she is.
No, I wish, though.
I don't.
No, I don't. I'm pretty much, I'm pain-free. You know, I'm on no medication, except for when I get sick once in a while for bronchitis, but no pain medication. I'm perfectly fine. So
now, there's one thing, since you brought that up, there's something that you might be interested in knowing. First of all, Sage, Sage's nose was gone completely. She had no nose, and her nose is a combination of tissues. But tell them about your hair and your scalp and what they had to do so that you have a feeling in, of what this little child has undergone.
Well, like I said, I've burned over 70% of my body. So they were really desperate for skin donor sites, and so there's very little good skin. So they actually had to shave my head and get the skin from my scalp as good donor. And so when they shaved it, like half my hair didn't grow back on half the side. And so they had to put tissue expanders and blow them up and expand my scalp and rotate it all. This was all like 7 surgeries, just to let you know. And so they rotated it over, and now I have long, luxurious hair. But it's my pride and joy.
She said to my class, she says, "I know why people stare at me all the time. Look at this beautiful hair.
Beautiful thing." But, yeah. Oh. Yes and no. I discovered how to talk. I know you guys don't see me move my lips very much, but I discovered that on my own. I just learned how to talk with my tongue, and I'm a self-learner, and then a speech therapist like tried to come in and like tell me to move my lips, and I was like, no, this isn't working. And I'm stubborn like that. I do what I want. I always say that. So I tried speech therapy, but I just learned on my own, basically. So, yes. I was completely selfish. I just wanted to stay there. I was like, oh, you know, they'll be fine, you know. They'll come see me, you know, when they die, you know. That's what I was thinking. But I never thought about my parents or family once. And that's actually interesting because I never thought about that before. But, yeah, I was completely selfish and just wanted to stay there for myself. Like Sandy's saying, it's just a feeling you get. It's just like, you know. It's undescribable, and it's just a fact up there. You just are instantly given instant knowledge of what your situation is right there. And for my situation, I knew those angels couldn't go up there. Yes. Oh, that's a very good question. She asked if I remembered anything of the fire. And no, I don't. And I'm so thankful. I don't remember any of the initial pain or anything like that. So I'm truly thankful. I don't remember anything till after my coma. So, good question. Oh, that is such a good question, because I have to read their charts. I just don't know their juvenile sex offenders. I read their entire histories. And every single one of their histories, every single patient, they were also hurt, and they were also offended and abused. And you just have to look at these kids and realize they're hurting and human beings. and they just need some extremely screwed up choices. But they still have the capability to be a human being and to have love. And I have such hope for everyone. I do. I'm not naive. I'm not ignorant. But it's just, I have this, I don't know how to describe it. It's just my endless hope for everyone. I seriously see goodness in them, and I try and find the goodness in the qualities and traits that I see that are positive, and I always make them known or aware that I see that. I'm like, oh, that is so nice that you just helped me out. Thanks for carrying that. That was awesome. Something so little like that, they're like, oh, I'm a good person. Like, no one has validated them. And that's what I try and do, is just try and validate that they exist and they're humans and they can be treated with love and respect just like everyone else. What? Yep, they're all minors from 12 to 18. Young.
Any other questions?
Any other questions?
Well,
thank you guys so much. I had an awesome time tonight. You guys are awesome.
Can you imagine? Is she not special? She says, don't say that. Okay. Before you go, and because we're nice and early, so I would like to share a little bit about me and how what Sage has told you tonight, how powerful this is in the world of near-death experiences. I did my research for my master's degree on near-death experiences, and part of that was related to how do near-death experiences change lives. First of all, the life of the individual who has them, and then the lives of those around them. And so what I just want to finish with is to tell you the kind of parents that this young woman has. During the time that she, after she was burned and had those surgeries, one of the things she could not have was ever dirty sheets. Every day, every single day, her dad changed the sheets on her bed. They were washed and changed every single day that she was ever at home. And as she said, he was always with her. The other thing that I learned from Sage was her mom especially, and I know her dad, but I can tell her mom mostly, never let Sage say, I can't do it. It was not in the vocabulary. You know, you can do it. And when the doctors gave her nubbies, she learned. I mean, Sage, she cuts her meat, she does her own thing, she ties, she is just incredible. And it's because all her life her parents said, you can do it. But one of the things you brought up that I just want to share with you before we close is, you mentioned that when these people are with this light, and every time you hear a near-death experience, you hear that these people go into this light and there's a sense of change. Well, then you ask the question, well, how can you love someone who is depraved? I don't know if any of you saw Osama bin Laden, the story of his life last night on Channel 7, KUED, and it was phenomenal to watch. And I couldn't help but to feel afraid that someone could hate an entire nation and not care about anyone in that nation. That it could be so permeating that individual's thinking. And I mean, even though he's chosen and done evil things, I can honestly say I don't hate him, and yet I could feel his hate. And he's very peaceful about his hate, which makes it really more difficult. And so I want to just address that for a minute. In my studies of people who have had near-death experiences, the thing that they say changes them the most is total acceptance by that light. What Sage is saying to you is, as she stands before these young boys who are sex offenders, she knows they have done evil things, terrible things. They have hurt other people. But in spite of that, she sees beyond it and knows they're
is within them a core of goodness that's never been validated. And when I did my research on near-death experiences, the thing that I, and it's in psychology, of course, so my big thing is, how is it we think? How is it we behave? What are the cognitive things that go on within us? Well, I want you to think about this. You've done something really not kind, all right, to someone. And they're in the room, and you've just done it. And maybe you've said something that's really a put down, and then you can see that they're hurt. I mean, you can see that what you've said has really done something in their heart. And right away, you're embarrassed, and you're uncomfortable, and you're like, well, they deserved it, you know, and you go on, and you're a little hard, and then you become, oh, besides that, they never ever, da-da-da-da, and, you know, by the time you finish, you really did the right thing in your, you know. And then a few minutes go by, and that person comes over and puts their arm around you and says, I'm so glad you're my friend. Hey, I know you said something that might have bothered me a little bit, but I know that you didn't really mean it. Wow, what does that do to you? What does that do to you? That says, I believe that beyond your behavior, you are good. I believe that beyond all the things you say, there is goodness in your heart. And that brings it out. It's like, oh my gosh, I'm okay. All right? Is that not an awesome feeling? I will tell you just one more story about that. I was watching an interview on television, and it was Timothy McVeigh. You remember Timothy McVeigh, who was the bomber, the Oklahoma bomber? And they were interviewing his neighbor. And she had known him when he was a child and into his teens. And when he was in his teens, 14 and 15 years old, he babysat her children for her a lot of times. And she described him, and she said that he was a gentle and a kind young man. This kind of reminded me of Osama bin Laden, what I learned last night and from personal interviews of people who knew him. But anyhow, she went on to say, you know, he was just a kind boy. My kids would say, Mom, we want Tim to be our babysitter if you're going out. And then the interviewer said to her, well, how do you feel about him now, knowing all of this, what he has done? He's killed children. He's killed people. He's maimed people's lives. And she said the most profound thing that has touched me greatly, and I think Sage has said it tonight. She said, we are all better than the worst thing we have ever done. Is that beautiful? Well, that's what Christ does. I mean, I don't want to preach, but I'm saying that when you're in that light or that deity or that being, is say to you, you are better than the worst thing you've ever done, and I love you. That is so powerful. I hope that gives you a little insight. I love this subject, and so I can't help but to go on and on. We will meet again next month. I'm not sure who our speaker is. Do we know? Do you have a question? Yes.
Yeah, I think we're all connected, and we're all one kindred, you know, and he's our, you know, our Heavenly Father who watches over us, and he wants us all to return to him. I think that's his main goal, his main, you know, his goal in life, and to achieve that goal, he has us experience what we do, our near-death experiences, to let those who don't know about it, and to know it's okay, and that there is love, and there is a place after you die that is so much better than here, and that we're all connected, and we all need to help each other. And yeah, I hope I answered it.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I hope you've enjoyed Sage as much as I do. Thank you.